strength and out of your good. Yeah, both of our New Testament readings this morning point the way to the achievement of harmony. Harmony in social relationships, harmony among ourselves as individuals, harmony within the groups of which we are a part. So what's so great about harmony? Why bother to achieve harmony? Why bother to strive to achieve harmony? That's a good first question. Is the maintenance of harmony in our relationships really all that important? And the answer is, obviously, harmony is tremendously important. Harmony is important because without harmony, there can be no human progress. Without harmony, nothing positive can be accomplished in human affairs. In fact, without a certain degree of social harmony, civilization could not even exist. So, what is harmony? That's the second question. What is harmony anyway? In attempting to define harmony, we might consider, first of all, what harmony is not. Harmony is not an example, for example, in music. Harmony is not everybody singing the same note at the same time. When everybody is singing the same note at the same time, that's unison. But it sure isn't harmony. Harmony is different from unison. And unison can be poor. Let everybody sing the same note at the same time. Harmony is much more interesting. It's exciting. Good harmony will grab you. Because harmony happens when different people sing different notes, but the notes that they're singing blend to make a sweet and melodious sound. They're singing together. They're marking the same tone. But they're singing quite different notes. The sopranos are soaring with their high notes, carrying the melody. The altos, the tenors, the basses are singing completely different parts. But the parts all fit together. They don't try to dominate one another. They complement one another. They blend the form and harmonious whole. And when harmony is sung well, it makes for a beautiful sound. Extraordinarily sublime. On the other hand, when people are not singing in harmony, but they are instead belting out whatever they darn well please at the top of their lungs, the results can be awful. Horrible. Instead of gorgeous melody as a harmonious whole, there's a cacophony of confused noises which sound dreadful. And some sensitive among us can actually be painful to the ear. That's called dissonance, which is the opposite of harmony. So harmony is worth working for. But harmony is not always easy to achieve. It burns me, but there are some people for whom it is. There are some people for whom it is easy to achieve harmony. The Welsh, for example. My father was Welsh. And in Wales, that little country that he came from, which is a mountainous principality to the west of England, the Welsh people love to sing. And when I was young, my father used to take me to great gatherings of Welsh people from all over North America. These get-togethers were gigantic songbooks, devoted entirely to hymn singing. The Welsh word is a cabandogan. And for a cabandogan, the Welsh people would congregate together in some big downtown church, maybe in Toronto or New York or San Francisco. And they would do absolutely nothing all weekend except sing Welsh hymns. That's all they do for the entire time. And when they sang, it was what I can only describe as, forgive me, a natural harmony. That is what I'm trying to say. It was as if the harmony seemed to be just in them. It appeared to pour out of them effortlessly. And some of the most beautiful music this side of heaven. Unfortunately, whenever I went to these hymn singing conventions, I could never duplicate what the others apparently could do easily and naturally. Maybe that's because I'm only half Welsh. But the fact is, in order to sing in harmony, I had to work. When I sung in church choirs, for example, I had to painstakingly memorize my part because I had to do music. And it would take me three times as long for me to learn my part as it took anybody else to learn theirs. And even then, when I learned my part, when I finally learned it, I had enormous difficulty staying on it. And so I had to stand as close as I could to the man standing next to me and cock my ear in his direction, because that was the only way I could stay on course. True harmony is very difficult to achieve. This is true in music. It's equally true in other areas of life as well. It's true in human relationships. And that's really what we're discussing today. Harmony in human relationships. Harmony between individuals, often completely different personality types. Harmony between individuals is sometimes extraordinarily difficult to achieve. And yet, it must be striven for. Because without harmony, there can be no social progress. Without harmony, nothing can be accomplished beyond the feeble efforts of one lone individual. Indeed, without harmony, certainly without a degree of harmony, the very existence of civilization would be impossible. Let alone the healthy functioning of the social organisms that make up that civilization. Without harmony, great industries could not produce the goods that make us conscious. Without harmony, communities would be impossible to live in. Without harmony, school systems would never teach and students would never learn. Without harmony, would produce juvenile delinquents instead of emotional, healthy, well-adjusted offspring. Without harmony, churches, congregations, would never even begin to fulfill their God-given mandate to win the world to Christ. Without harmony, there is this division. Without harmony, there is nothing but social destruction. And that's how incredibly important harmony is. It's essential to society's life. And yet, as I say, harmony can be extraordinarily difficult to achieve. But it must be achieved, because harmony is essential. What causes this harmony? What causes this harmony? That's a good third question. When I was a little kid growing up in the East End of Toronto, the boys in my neighborhood used to play a childish game. The childish game we played was, I'm the king of the castle. And one of us would stand on top of the mantle and chant to the others, I'm the king of the castle, and you're a dirty rascal. And then the other kids would rush the king who would announce that he was the king of the castle. And they'd try to knock him off his pedestal and take his place on the top of the mountain. And when one of them succeeded, the chant would be repeated. And then the other kids would try to knock him off, and so on. Basically, this is the same childish game that many people, even when they're supposedly grown up, keep on playing. No matter what age they are, they keep on playing this idiotic game. Among the adults, the childish game takes the form of, I'm more important than you. Or, it's material variation. Mine's better than yours. Which is the original thing. And among adults, these childish games never stop being played. It's, you know, my biggest disappointment when I left graduate school was I found this game being played among academics. My degree is better than your degree. No, you're kidding. Whether these games are played in one-to-one personal competition, or whether these games are played in communal power struggles, like World War I was that. Whether it's personal competition or communal power struggles, we see people playing these challenge games of one partnership all the time. And it's found in the Bible. And in our reading from St. Mark's Gospel, this sort of silly, childish competition was even taking place among the 12 apostles. The 12 disciples were arguing among themselves which one of them was the greatest. Incredible! There were 12 Roman men who had been with Jesus for nearly 3 years, and they were still playing this childish game of one up and two. This silly, pointless game of I'm more important than you. And when Jesus called his disciples to him in order to ask them what they had been discussing on the road, they were silent. They were silent because they were embarrassed. They knew in their hearts that their argument about which one of them was the greatest was not only childish, but stupid and pointless. They knew it was wrong. They knew it was wrong because it was injurious to the unity of their group. And that's why, in our epistle, James says, where jealousy and selfish ambition exist. There will be disorder and wickedness of every kind. Where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and wickedness of every kind. James is saying that these wrong attitudes of jealousy and selfish ambition are inspired by Satan. They're inspired by Satan, who is always doing his best to create disharmony everywhere he can. And Satan knew in this instance that if he could spread discord among the disciples of Jesus, he would be hindering the work that Jesus had come to do. Satan is always playing this game with the followers of Jesus. I've been a pastor for 40 years, and I know that from hard experience. Satan is always playing this game with the followers of Jesus, and Satan never gets tired of playing it. Because Satan knows that discord always hamstrings the church. Satan's number one priority is to put the Church of Jesus Christ out of business. And if Satan can get Christians at each other's throats, arguing about this and that, they won't have any time or energy left over to do the work that God has called them to do. So Satan is always on the lookout for opportunity to create disharmony in the church. And Jesus knew this only too well. Jesus knew what Satan was up to. And Jesus knew that he had to nip this childish nonsense in the bud before it got out of hand, before it destroyed the unity of this tiny band of disciples, which was going to be the nucleus of this church. And so Jesus called his disciples to him, and as the disciples gathered around, Jesus sat down, what a rabbi always did, and was about to teach his disciples something of great significance. And what Jesus gave his disciples was this very important piece of wisdom, divine wisdom. Divine wisdom that is hidden from worldly people who have a worldly outlook. And they have a worldly outlook because they are spiritually blind. And the divine wisdom that Jesus shared with his disciples that day is so true that when it's adopted, it leads to success, it leads to happiness, because it leads to harmony. Jesus said, listen, fellas, if any one of you would be the first among his brethren, he must work at being the last of them, the servant. In other words, if we want to be a leader, we've got to be a servant. If we want to be great, we've got to be humble and defer to others. If we want to be happy and fulfilled, we've got to put ourselves last. When I was a kid, we used to sing a song, Jesus and Others and You, is a wonderful way to spell joy. Jesus and Others and You in the life of each girl and each boy. J is for Jesus, for He has first place. O is for others. You meet face to face. Y is for you. In whatever you do, put yourself last and spell joy. This is revolutionary. It's not secret. It's revolutionary because it sets the so-called wisdom of the world on its head. The wisdom of the world is, if you want to succeed, you got to compete. You got to compete with others, and you got to try to beat them. And if necessary, beat them into a pulp. You got to talk, gouge, and elbow your way to the top to be the king of the castle. But that worldly idea of success is an illusion, because it doesn't lead to happiness, it doesn't lead to fulfillment. It leads to loneliness and misery, inward-emptiness, spiritual poverty, utter failure. And most of all, it leads to social discord and tears asunder the very fabric of success. So what Jesus is saying, if you want to have happiness and success in life, don't compete. Cooperate. Cooperate with others. And in order to cooperate effectively with others, be humble and put yourself last. Don't be self-seeking. Don't try to go. Don't set out to be number one. Instead, do our best. Do our best to work in harmony with others to serve the common good. And this approach works. It brings personal happiness, it brings fulfillment to the people who are willing to try, and it brings peace and harmony to the community of which they are. We can apply this lesson of today's gospel reading and epistle reading in our lives as individuals and in our life, in the parish, the congregation to which we belong. I have one more Sunday, and then we're getting a new mass. Remember, the only way that we as Christians can fight the efforts of Satan to cripple Christ's church is to refuse to give in to the temptation to engage in any kind of discord. The only way that we can fight the efforts of Satan to cripple our work together as Christians is to determine to do everything that we can to create harmony and common purpose within the Christian fellowship to which we belong. Any parish is a collection of very different individuals. No two members are exactly the same. The uniqueness of every individual should be respected and celebrated. In order to have harmony, we don't all have to talk alike, or act alike, or be alike. We can be each one of us unique individuals that God created us to be. But if, as individuals, we are determined to cooperate with God, if we're determined to work together for the realization of our common goal of building up Christ's church and winning the world for Him, if we're determined to cooperate and work together as effectively as we can, we will have peace and harmony in our life. With the achievement of that harmony, success will be ours. If not, we'll be able to stop us. In the name of the Father and of the Son.